Oh, God. Mom has gone a little crazy with figurines here, huh? Little Kathy Bates? Although you probably haven't seen Misery, which is a good thing, because Rory couldn't sleep alone for a week after we watched it. That wouldn't be a problem for you, because you don't sleep alone anyway. I'm guessing. I don't know what your and Mom's sleeping arrangement is. Now I'm wishing I hadn't brought it up, because it's such a wow, don't want to go there kind of a subject for me.
Is treating me bad, misery. I'm the kind of guy who never used to cry. The world is treating me bad, misery. Ooh. Hello, and welcome to the Ultimate Gilmore Girls Movie Night Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Courtney.
And we're here to talk about.
Not expecting that.
And we're here to talk about Misery. That is a song. I did not make it up.
It is a song. I know another song. Oh my gosh, it's like a very 2000s band that had like one, they were like a one-hit wonder that had a song on their album called Misery. And that's what I think of every time I hear it. I'm going to have to look up the name of the band.
That song I was singing, I don't know the original, but the Beatles covered it on one of their albums.
Yeah.
On their Please Please Me album. So that's what I was picturing in my mind.
No, I've been singing this other song, and I can't remember the name of the group. I'm going to have to look it up. You came out of nowhere with it, and it just shocked
me. When you hear that song, you think about it?
No, the whole time we talked about seeing the movie, I was remembering that song, but I can't.
Okay. I was going to do a parody of that song, but then I thought, if I don't say the word misery, you don't understand the connection, because that song's not actually in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure. How's life?
You know, we're living. We had a tragedy today.
We did have a tragedy.
Well, I won't call it a tragedy. I'll call it a traumatic experience.
What happened?
Muffin got scratched at daycare.
Muffin did get scratched at daycare. That's sad.
It was really sad.
Yeah.
The Moffitts.
Moffitts? Who are they?
I'm going to look them up because they did have a one-hit wonder.
Little Miss Moffitt? Well, that's Muffet.
I
don't know. I'm excited because tomorrow we're recording this on Wednesday, the Wednesday before it comes out. Tomorrow, which is Thursday.
I don't think anyone knows, though. I think it's a one-hit wonder that only I know about because none of their songs sound familiar to me.
Thursday, which is tomorrow when we're recording this, the Beatles are making an announcement.
There's two left.
Not like the Beatles entity.
They're like a corporation?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. The Beatles as a whole are making an announcement.
Because, I guess the Moffitts aren't a corporation.
Because a new remastering is coming out.
Oh.
And there's a new Beatles song that is coming out.
Super
excited.
Taylor's version? Like when she comes out with albums?
No, they're not all re-recorded.
Okay.
It's just like remastering and having demos be on the set and everything. But there's also
very excited.
What?
So you're very excited.
I am. Like, it's the Red and Blue album, I believe, which is a.
I've never even heard of the Red and Blue album.
The Red and Blue albums are compilation albums.
Oh.
They came out in early 70s. Wow. The Blue album is like from 1964 to 1966. And then the Red album is 1967 to 1970.
Interesting.
So they came out like right after. They disbanded. I think they're remastering that, and then a new Beatles song is coming up, which is Now and Then, which is a wonderful song that John Lennon has on a demo cassette. And in the 90s, they were going to come up with a couple of other songs, which is they did Free as a Bird and Real Love. And in that one, they took those two songs and they just added like their parts. They were on John's demos. So they kind of cleaned it up a little and added their parts and made it into a Beatles song. And they're doing that with Free as a Bird. Not Free as a Bird. That's what they did in the 90s. They're doing that with Now and Then, which they worked on in the earlier 90s, but they couldn't make it well. They couldn't do it well. And now with all the technological advances, they're able to fully clean it up. And with AI, I believe they're able to clean it up more than they could have in the 90s.
So there are good parts of AI. It's not just like terrifying.
No, there are good parts.
Like, and I'm really scared of AI.
And I am of the belief that I really enjoy it. A lot of people hate it because it's not real, but I really enjoy it when something comes up of like a performer singing a song that they did not sing. I think it's fun.
I only now, like it when it's Toad singing songs.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Like I think they had, like they did Paul McCartney's voice singing like Goodbye Yellow Brick Road or something. Okay. And I think that kind of stuff is fun. Now, when that becomes a problem is when they start making money off of that and the artist isn't making any money because they didn't actually sing it. So like if you say, hey, this is actually Paul McCartney singing Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, I think that can become problematic. But if you understand that, oh, this is an AI, it's fun. Or having Frank Sinatra sing a gangster rap song, like right. a hip-hop song, is super fun, I think. But it can be problematic if you're trying to fool people into thinking, oh, they really sang this.
They're doing it a lot with the like actors because half of their cast has died. So like they're doing AI songs with actors that like died before the song came out. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool to hear Corey Mateet sing something.
Yeah. So I really enjoy it. I'm in a lot of Beatles Facebook groups. That's going to come as a surprise to you. I listen to a lot of Beatles podcasts and a lot of them really don't like it. Mm. Like they were very upset originally. Now and then it came out. Someone had listened to it and said that it was a younger version of Paul McCartney singing, that they AI'd him to be okay, a younger version. Like, but I think they've come out and said that they haven't done that. So,
but also
if you're wanting, it's also hard though. Cause if like you're depending on what Paul did, if you're wanting this younger version of John, 70s version of John, I think you should then AI a 70s version of Paul to go with it.
I think that's fair.
I would not mind that. But a lot of people, I don't know if they actually did that because I've heard that the Beatles entity came out and said that they did not change anybody's voices.
This is what I like about your interests, though, is that there are people who get like, high and mighty about the things they like no, nothing can change. It's like purists.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you're very good at like liking the original stuff, but also being like new stuff can be cool.
Yeah.
I like that about you.
Yeah. Well, I thank you.
One of the many things.
But I like that AI doesn't bother me. If you're making money saying that this is an artist when it's not them singing and they're not getting any money, like artists now, which is one thing that all artists are fighting for, musical artists can be replaced because you don't need actual Taylor Swift when you can just AI her voice. And,
okay, but
or,
we all need Taylor Swift.
I know. That was a
really bad
figuring
example,
out like, we all with how her. Popular she is. That was probably a really horrible example.
Yes.
Because you're not going to make as much money as if it was actually her.
Well, and the NFL is making a whole lot of money just by her being there right now. So the world needs her. She's needed.
Okay. Sounds good. And speaking of Taylor Swift, as you know, I am a Swiftie. What was that?
You're not.
Okay, I'm not. I'm sorry.
You make fun of me every time like I get excited about a new album.
I don't make fun of you.
Yes, you do.
Like years ago. I haven't done it in a long time. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking of like 5 years ago me.
Okay.
That's not the current me.
Okay.
Let me grow as a human.
Okay.
But anyways, I get annoyed because I love football. I get annoyed with people complaining about her because a lot of football fans are complaining about her saying, I want to watch football. Show us the game. All this stuff. When them showing Taylor Swift a few times a game, they're not showing her instead of showing the game.
Right. They're showing her in times that they would be showing the crowd.
And usually when they're cheering. So I think that's ridiculous when people complain about that because it doesn't bother me
ridiculous.
At all. I enjoy it. Their podcast is probably my favorite podcast.
My only concern with Taylor and Travis right now is that I don't want the world to put too much pressure on them because I think this could actually be a nice relationship for her because he's very different than the guy she's been with before and he seems like a nice guy and she needs just a nice normal guy. And I'm really, really worried that like there's too much pressure on it, and it's gonna combust. Mm-hmm. How could a relationship like that end up being successful? when there's like this many eyes on it.
Speaking of Travis, I want to talk about his brother, Jason.
The Philadelphia Eagles player?
Who plays for the Eagles. However, I hate the Eagles. You know this. I love you, though. But I hate the Eagles. But they are releasing another Christmas album this year, and I'm excited about that.
The Eagles are?
Like they did last year. They did an LP. I played it. It's not all the Eagles. It's Jason Kelce and a couple other players, and one who can actually really sing.
Can Jason Kelce sing?
I think they might help him in the other end a little bit. But there's one of the Eagles players that can actually sing and like shock them by singing like White Christmas in the locker room one time. And so they're like, we need an album. I think that was a lot. They're like, we need to do an album and he's going to be the star. But they,
well, that's fine.
It was like five songs. You and I talked about it because I was listening to it
when you tell me about Christmas albums.
And I was shocked. I figured you'd like it because it was the Eagles.
I know, but you tell me about so many. If it was like in the mix of other ones, I promise I wasn't listening.
But it was actually really good. It wasn't an LP. It was more like an EP. It was like five songs. Okay. This one is going to be 10 songs or 11 songs. It's an actual like LP. And I think one of the songs Jason Kelce actually wrote. So I'm interested. I think Travis, they mentioned on New Heights, which is their podcast, which is the best podcast out there. Well, second best next to The Ultimate Gilmore Girls Movie Night.
Yeah.
But they talked about Travis Kelce was on one of the songs. And Jason Kelce was asked if Taylor Swift would make an appearance on the album. And he said, a lot of people would listen if she did, but they already recorded this album. So she's not. So they said maybe in the future album she's going to be on it. But it's really good. The original. You don't know.
That's good that they're doing it. I just said that is good.
I meant the album was really good.
Okay.
From last year. It's good that they're doing it. I'm excited. I just found out about it today because I was listening to today's podcast. So.
We also went on vacation.
We did go on vacation. We went to Philadelphia. Well, not really.
We flew into Philadelphia.
And then the Eagles lost that weekend. You're welcome, everyone. Because
you bought a Cowboys hat in the Philadelphia airport.
And that made the Eagles lose. Which is funny because we were flying out and we were connecting in Dallas. I probably could have found a Dallas Cowboys hat in Dallas.
Easily. But we were in the Philly airport for a decent amount. In the Dallas airport for a while too, though. Mm-hmm.
But we didn't really like walk around that much. No, so we went to Hershey, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. And then we went to LVC. What is LVC?
My college.
Yes, your college. I was talking to someone about going to LVC and she said, I don't know what an LVC is. It made me laugh.
Yeah, no one knows what that is.
But we had a good time.
I had a subject the other day that was talking about their college. They were a nursing student. And I was like, so you're what, like a freshman and sophomore? He was like, I'm a sophomore. And he said, so I guess I'm not technically a nursing student. And I was like, what does that mean? And he was like, I'm not taking nursing classes. And I was like, oh, I went to a college. I didn't go to a university. So, like, I don't understand that concept. We started in our major as soon as we got there. You don't have to, like, wait to get into the college of nursing or whatever. You just go. You just start taking classes.
Yeah.
Like, I did 2 years of elementary education, and I actually took elementary education classes before I switched to psych.
That's wild to me. Going to Oklahoma State.
There's no different colleges, though. So it's not like I need to be accepted to a different college. I got accepted to LVC. I can take whatever classes I want.
Going to Oklahoma State, I did 2 years of gen ed.
That sucks.
And then I went into my actual, what I went to college for.
That's also why, like, I never understood when people are like, well, you're mostly just doing your major classes your senior year. Because I was still doing, like, religion and philosophy and stuff my senior year.
Oh, senior year. Junior and senior year, it was education
teaching half of
it was all well half of senior year was student teaching, but like my last few years was 100% education.
Oh,
classes.
No, I didn't take a ton of gen eds. I probably did most of them in the first 2 years, but I took a handful junior and senior year. But yeah, LVC is fantastic and I love it.
We had a good time.
I want our kids to go there so I can visit them.
That's expensive.
It is very expensive.
I want them to go to a cheaper college.
No, but now they have a nursing major.
Okay.
So our kids could be nurses.
Sure. I don't know if
they're in Pennsylvania, because they'd have to take their boards in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Okay. Let's talk about Misery.
Okay.
Are you prepared?
I will be.
Did you watch this movie?
I mean, I watched it. Okay.
So did I. Wow. So we're going to start with James Caan. I call him Jimmy Caan.
Do you want to know where that's talked about?
No, I want to start into the... Yeah, go ahead.
You just forgot.
I just forgot.
So go misery ahead. Was mentioned twice in Gilmore Girls. In season 1, episode 16, Lorelai talks about the figurines in their house and says that her mom has gotten little Kathy Bates. And then this is where I'm going to admit that I am not as good of a Gilmore Girls fan as I thought I was, because in season 6, episode 21, Rory says they're there for a reason, and Logan says to reenact their favorite scenes from Misery. And I have zero memory of that line being said. This is the first time this has happened. We've watched 51 movies, and this is the first time that I've read a line and been like, I don't remember anyone saying that.
Wow.
So I don't know what it's in reference to. I'm kind of...
What is your history with this movie?
I watched it for my blog 10 years ago. That was it. I mean, it's fine.
Mm.
In terms of Stephen King movies, I feel like I can handle this one.
Okay. Yeah, I have never seen it. I had never read the book. I think I have the book. I think I own the book, but I've never read it. It is one of those movies that I knew what it was about, though. I knew that it was an author who... I didn't know how they got into the bed, but I knew it was an author who was basically being held captive by a maniacal fan, or a fan who, I don't know what their ulterior motives are, but they were holding them captive. So I knew that, and I had seen part of different scenes. I saw the scene of the breaking of the legs, or whatever.
The hobbling.
I've seen that scene before. I think that was 1990. Maybe I Love the 90s. That was a show on VH1 as well.
Gosh, that was such a good show.
I Love the whatever.
Can we bring those back?
I Love the
70s.
Can
I find them somewhere?
Yeah. I used to watch them all the time.
I loved those. Yeah. Even if it was a decade that I didn't know very well.
I enjoyed those more.
I mean, I liked the ones that I could relate to more, but I loved those.
But
shows.
I think, I'm Do sure they, again. I'm sure that's what I remember from.
Let's bring those back.
You can probably find them. I wonder if they're on streaming.
I know. Now I'm really curious. Are they streaming somewhere?
I don't think VH1 is on a streaming service. It's not like MTV. But yeah. So we start with James Caan. He portrays novelist Paul Sheldon, famously renowned for his trademark character, Misery. Shortly after finishing his latest book, he drives back to New York from the Silver Creek Lodge. After a while, his car swerves off the icy road in a blizzard. In the car, he has a flashback in which he's talking to his agent, portrayed by Lauren Bacall. And that brings us to today's 122nd most popular segment.
5 degrees or less of Gene Kelly.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. All right.
Lauren Bacall. Do you know who Lauren Bacall is?
I mean, yeah.
Okay. Lauren Bacall is in a movie called Sex and the Single Girl with Edward Everett Horton. Edward Everett Horton is in The Gay Divorcee, Top Hat, and Shall We Dance with Fred Astaire. And then Fred Astaire is in Ziegfeld Follies, and that's Entertainment 2 with Gene Kelly. Edward Everett Horton was a wonderful character actor. It's funny because in The Gay Divorcee, Top Hat, and Shall We Dance, he basically plays the exact same character in all three of those movies.
Hmm.
And Fred Astaire's kind of number one man who, he's an older character actor, but his number one man who helps him with whatever he needs to get done. It's interesting because he plays the exact same character that I have a hard time telling those movies apart. But yeah, so Gene Kelly 3. Once I knew that Lauren Bacall was in the movie, I thought this
you
was
were good. Yeah.
Off the top of my head, and I told you this when we were watching the movie, Lauren Bacall was married to Humphrey Bogart. If we don't want to get how they're related as far as our movies are concerned. She's married to Humphrey Bogart. Humphrey Bogart was in the quote unquote Rat Pack with Frank Sinatra, which is how, because the Rat Pack actually started as just a bunch of buddies drinking, led by Humphrey Bogart, and Frank Sinatra was a part of that. So we think of the Rat Pack as Sammy Davis Jr., Peter Lawford, Joey Bishop, and Dean Martin, and Frank Sinatra. But it started as with Humphrey Bogart in the 50s as just a bunch of drinking buddies. And the way they were called the Rat Pack was because Lauren Bacall said, you guys look like a... They were drinking, and she said, you just look like a damn Rat Pack as they were drinking, because they, I guess, looked like vermin or something. And then, of course, Frank Sinatra is in three movies with Gene Kelly. But I decided not to use that one. But I wanted to share that I know random. I like to share random knowledge that I have. So there you go. And then Humphrey Bogart died, and then Frank Sinatra took a hold of, but they never called themselves the Rat Pack. Frank Sinatra did. He never, like,
even when they were like headlining.
Yeah, they never called themselves the Rat Pack.
What did they call themselves?
The Klan, which,
oh god,
which has a bad connotation.
Yeah, but I feel like it still had a bad connotation at the time.
But I think that's what they call themselves, just like a clan of people.
Yikes!
I don't think he realized how bad it looked, or Sammy Davis didn't realize how bad it looked.
Yikes!
Or Dean Martin or any of them.
But I think Sammy Davis should have known.
But Frank Sinatra was extremely helpful, because like with Sammy Davis Jr., a lot of times he wasn't able to
do stuff.
Stay at the hotels, or they wouldn't let him. So Frank Sinatra really tried to push against segregation, mm-hmm. and try. So he was very on the forefront of that. The Beatles were too, since we started this with a Beatles song. They refused to play in any places that had any segregation. That was just a random thing.
I am going to do something now called 5 degrees or less of Bravo people. Because I can connect someone from this movie to the Bravo.
Is this going
to
be a weekly thing? Am I going to have to pull?
We'll see.
Am I going to have to? Can you sing it every time? Because I don't want to have to pull my song and your song.
No, I'll come up with a better one. Okay. I don't want to steal yours. And we'll see. Maybe I'll just come up with like a Bravo corner theme song.
Okay.
Because I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it every week. Or every 2 weeks. But my connection from this movie to the Bravo verse is Frances Sternhagen, who played the deputy's wife.
We haven't gotten to her yet.
We will. And I'm going to do it now.
Whoa.
So she was born, I'm just now realizing she was born in 1930, and I am not finding any information that she died. I think she's still alive. But she played the deputy's wife, and the two of them were hilarious in this movie, and we will talk about that later. But she also played Bunny McDougal in Sex and the City, who is Trey McDougal's mother / Charlotte's mother-in-law. Sex and the City starred Sarah Jessica Parker. I'm going to say Carrie Bradshaw, but it doesn't. Sarah Jessica Parker, who's best friends with Andy Cohen and has been on Watch What Happens Live many times.
All right.
So there it is.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm curious if I'll be able to do it, because there's a lot of people on those shows. There's a lot of shows to connect it to, and some of them are actors and actresses. Andy knows everybody.
You probably can.
I probably could.
If you dedicate yourself to it. If you really look for it. Like,
I don't know if I want to.
I have dedicated myself to this Gene Kelly bit.
I'm not committing to it.
I'm going with it.
I'm not committing to it. But I think I could. And if that's not a close enough thing, just Sarah Jessica Parker being friends with Andy, I will also say that Bethany Frankel has been mentioned on Sex and the City, at least in the reboot. And I have a weird feeling that Carol Radziwill was also mentioned.
I think Andy Cohen is better, because mentioning somebody doesn't count.
Okay.
And I feel like it has to be somebody that's in something.
Okay. And if her just being friends with him doesn't count, then she's been on Watch What Happens Live with, several times.
Okay. Okay. So that was...
So yeah. Bunny McDougal bringing it all together.
She also, the actress, her part in this, which is Buster's wife,
mm-hmm.
is not in the book.
I swear, they just brought them in for the community.
They did, 100%. But we can
funny.
Get into that when they come in.
Yeah, we will.
Alright, so they're talking about the latest Misery book. He's rescued by nurse Annie Wilkes, who takes him back to her house for 2 days and reveals that she is his number one fan. When Annie asks if she can read his new book, she proves to be a little eccentric when she lashes out in a fit of rage over the swearing in his book. When she leaves the room, he seems faked out and looks like he wants to leave quickly.
Faked out?
That's what this says.
Maybe freaked out.
I think freaked out. Faked out makes no sense.
Like, shouldn't fake him out.
Oh! Yeah, I don't know. The next day, Annie brings home a copy of the final Misery book, and over the days reveals how many pages she has read.
So did we talk about how, like, he was writing the final one?
No.
Okay. So the reason he is out there is because he was writing the final book for his Misery series.
Mm-hmm.
And she found it like found the manuscript in his briefcase and just like took it. So that's why she was reading it. He did eventually tell her she could read it, but she just like took it.
Yeah, the following night she nearly kills him over the fact that he's killed Misery in his final book. I was surprised how quickly this turned.
I felt like it was dry.
I thought the movie was going to be a lot more of him feeling comforted that she's taking care of.
Oh, no.
I was shocked by how quickly it got to
him
being worried for his life.
Basically. He's incapacitated for the whole time, so there's really no reason to build a relationship between the two of them because he's always going to feel trapped.
Yeah.
So you might as well just have him feel trapped in a scary situation versus trapped but, like, not uncomfortable.
Okay. I had wished that they had built that.
The book might.
I was very surprised that they went so quickly into basically, I'm going to kill you type of thought process.
She's not a great nurse. I will say that.
Yeah.
Watching her take out his IV was like painful for me.
Mm-hmm.
She just like yanked it out. And you have to put, she didn't put any pressure on that spot. Like when you pull something out of somebody's vein, it's going to bleed a decent amount. Definitely. And she just, like, pulled it out. You have to apply pressure.
That's what I hear. That's what you said. Nurse.
She's not a very good nurse. She also killed some babies, so, like, definitely not a very good nurse.
Yeah. She threatens to kill him if anything happens to her, to Misery, not to Annie Wilkes. He immediately tries to escape, but he fails.
But Misery's not real.
Nope. The next day, Annie seems happy and tries to persuade him to burn the manuscript, to which he seems reluctant. Later, she reveals she wants him to write a new book in which Misery comes back to life. When he sees a hairpin on the floor, he has an idea to buy time. He asks Annie to buy some different paper because his current paper smudges, to which she responds with another fit of rage. While she's out shopping, Paul uses the hairpin to unlock his bedroom door and escape. Have you ever done that before?
I was going to say no just immediately, but I actually think I have. I think I've tried to break in somewhere with a bobby pin. Like, not break in, but, like, my own place or something. Something that was locked.
I've never tried.
I mean, have you ever done that on any of our locks? Like, not used the key? You've tried to use, like...
I mean, I'm sure I could.
I've used, like...
I would think it'd be... It's the same.
I've used, like, a straight pin.
I'm assuming you could, because if you can do it with that, it's not...
Yeah.
Different. No, not any more different than a bobby
pin. I've used, like, a straight pin to get in, because I think I did that when I was growing up, too, because my mom always had, like, sewing needles and stuff. But I don't know that I've ever used a bobby pin. Bobby pins are hard, though, because they usually, maybe back then they didn't, but they usually have, like, a little rubber bulb at the end of them, so they're not sharp.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get it into that small. I feel like I have tried this, because I'm having very strong images of using bobby pins and having them not work.
However, he soon finds out that the front door is locked as well. He makes a visit.
But also, what was the plan?
Crawl?
The ground is covered in snow.
Yeah, you can't go out with
the roads are mostly closed. His legs are not working because they're completely broken. What was the plan?
I think
she would find you at some point.
She wouldn't find him probably before he almost dies. He freezes to death.
Well, that, and they're in a really rural area.
Yeah.
There's no one around. He already knows that because he can see out the window. What did he think? Like, what was the plan? He was so disappointed when the door was locked. And I was like, what
are you going to do?
Yeah. My first thought was he's going to get out and find a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's the only way to save yourself at that point. Get out, find a phone.
Yeah.
But he was so disappointed about that. And I feel like they were trying to make the audience be disappointed that the door was locked. But like, I wasn't disappointed because what are you going to do? You can't walk and there's snow everywhere.
Definitely. He makes a visit to her living room and medicine closet. In the living room, he accidentally knocks a small ceramic penguin off the table and puts it back the wrong way. In parentheses, this will be important later.
It was,
but I was disappointed how they did it.
They waited a really long time.
I liked that.
You liked
it? Because you forgot. It gave you time to forget about it.
Yeah.
It gave you time to completely forget about that.
Because when you see it happen, you're like, okay, he's going to get caught.
Yeah, because it shows...
Is that why you didn't like it?
No. Okay. I didn't like it that they didn't show her seeing it.
Oh.
I wish, like, way later she'd come in and she looked and she, you could see, like, in my mind I'm picturing that in the foreground, her in the background looking at it.
I think that makes it more suspenseful, though, because you really don't, like, you forget about it, and also if you do remember it, you think, oh, she must not notice.
Yeah, but you know, I wish they had shown her. I feel like that would have added that would have added the suspense to me. I feel like it didn't have the suspense, it just made it a little bit more surprising. But it did add any suspense.
I'm wondering if the book is mostly from his perspective. Because when they're in the house, everything's pretty much his perspective. You don't get to see her doing things by herself in the house. But you do follow her to, like, the store and stuff.
Yeah. He realizes that Annie's phone is a fake one, canceling his chances of contacting the outside world. But she has to have a phone someplace.
Yeah, she has to.
I mean, he can't really go up the stairs.
He was like so disappointed about that too. And all I could think was like, just keep looking. Like, that seems like it must just be decorative.
There has to be a phone.
There's got to be a phone somewhere. He got like really disappointed by certain things where I was like keep on. Like, stop. Isn't going to be easy. Why are you expecting it to be easy?
In the medicine closet, he takes of the pills that Annie had been giving him for his fracture. He also tries to escape through her back door in the kitchen. Cannot open it.
And I'm going to say that I was really irritated that he never looked at the back of the blister pack of pills. To see what it was. And is that just because I'm, like, were you annoyed?
No.
Okay, I think it might just be because I'm a nurse then. Because I really just wanted, like, is she sedating him? Is it actually pain medication? Like, you knew it wasn't what she said it was. But, like, I would have at least liked to know.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because later he stockpiles it to poison her, or I guess drug her.
Yeah.
But like,
what's that going to do to her?
Right. Is she going to die, or is she just going to be knocked out? And if I know what the medication is, I can have an idea of that. That was really irritating.
He hears Annie returning and immediately races back to his room. Fortunately, he gets back to his room in time just when the door opens. She gets him back into bed and gives him a notepad and the pills, which he pretends to swallow. Following night, he saves up a lot of the powder from the pills. In the morning, an argument starts between Paul and Annie about the book, which escalates into a fit of rage about her growing up in Bakersfield, watching chapter plays. Meanwhile, the local authorities find Sheldon's 65 Mustang buried in the snow. When Annie reads some of Paul's new manuscript, she responds happily. Paul requests that Annie have dinner with him to celebrate Misery's return. At the dinner, Paul makes a toast to Misery's return, but asks if she has any candles. And while she goes to get the candles, he drugs her drink by putting the powder in.
But does he, or does he poison her? We don't know.
Either way.
Is he knocking her out, or is he killing her?
Either way would have been fine for what was going on with him.
Again, though, if she's knocked out, what are you going to do? Like, we've learned that there's no phone on that floor, so he either has to
figure out how to get to the
figure out how to get upstairs or leave. But if he leaves, you can't drive a car. Even if he could get her keys, he can't drive. Both legs are broken.
Mm-hmm. And you also don't know how long she's going to be knocked out.
Will
it
be
an hour or two, or will it be all night?
I mean, I know he had to do something.
Yeah.
But like, all of his plans to me feel like that's a great first step. And now what is your plan after that?
Mm-hmm. But anyways, that doesn't work anyways, because she comes back and accidentally spills her drink.
Do you think she knew?
No.
There's a tiny part of me that thinks maybe she knew. Because at that point, we don't already know that she saw the figurine.
Yeah, I don't think she knew. I don't think she knew that he put something in it.
I think maybe she did.
Okay.
If he's not sleeping the way that she expects him to on a sedative.
She might be wondering, what's he doing with that?
She might have cameras in his room. We don't know.
That's true.
I think maybe she knew.
All right.
I think it's way too much of just a coincidence that she spilled the wine,
The next scene.
I want to ask Steven. Let's call him.
Maybe it's in the book.
Let's do like a call in.
Maybe it's in the book that she does do it on purpose. Apparently, I need to read this book.
I don't, but you can.
The next scene shows a line of clips of Paul writing the book. In the last clip, Annie gives him his pills and talks about suicide. When she leaves the house, he goes out of his room again and reads her scrapbook.
That was when she comes in, this whole time, she's very manic, like lots of energy, talking really fast, and then it's like an instant depressive episode. I mean, it's not like textbook definition of bipolar disorder, because like the episodes are long and short, and like that's not really, it doesn't really term like that, but it did kind of give me a second to be like, oh, she, like, you know, she's mentally unstable, but it really was a moment of like, yeah, you definitely have something going on.
Yeah.
Because it was so bizarre. Maybe that's when she noticed the figurine.
I don't know. As I was watching, I wasn't thinking about how manic she was. Like, I was just watching.
I was.
Like, how manic she was from scene to scene was not going through my mind. I was just watching the story.
Because also, irritability is a big symptom of bipolar disorder when you're in mania. Like, it can be you're getting all the things done and you never sleep and you talk all the time, blah, blah, blah. But it could also be like severe irritability where they're like yelling at everybody, even people outside of your family.
I don't work in mental health field, so
I know, and I'm currently learning how to diagnose, like research diagnosis, not official diagnosis, but research diagnose people with bipolar. So I'm very acutely aware of it right now. But it was the kind of an interesting moment of like, oh, there's like an actual problem that you can pinpoint, not just she's a sociopath that's wants to kill people.
She leaves the house. He goes out of the room again and reads her scrapbook. It includes many newspaper clippings revealing that she killed her father, her college roommate, and many patients in hospitals. Many babies, sorry, in hospitals.
Did she kill other people? I feel like
it just says patients right here. I don't know.
From what I remember, it was mostly because she was working on like in an NICU.
Yeah. He grabs a knife from the kitchen and wheels himself to his room. Later, he awakens to the sight of Annie as she forcibly sedates him. In the morning, she ties him to the bed and reveals that she knows that he's been out of his room. The scrapbook, the ceramic penguin, the hairpin. Then she hobbles him, puts a block of wood between his feet, and hits them with a sledgehammer. God.
This is so hard to watch. Mm-hmm. I remember, though, like, watching it, I had a vivid memory of her hitting him multiple times. She just hits each leg once.
Each leg once.
And that's it. So it must have been a very...
But it's also hard because in my mind I was picturing what she was doing. Like, I was picturing her
doing. And those legs are already broken, too. Like, that was the other thing. Like, those bones are not set.
In the next scene, Buster...
And then at the end, he's just walking with a cane. Like, there's no way. There's no way that that man's legs are good enough that he can just, like, walk with a cane. He would have to have, like, Canadian canes or something. Like, he can't just have, like, one pimp cane that he's walking with. Like,
yes. In the next scene, Buster, who we haven't talked about, Buster and his wife has been throughout, have had scenes throughout this movie, providing the comic relief.
They're so cute.
They were by far my favorite scenes.
They're so cute.
Yes.
But, like, in a cranky old couple way. Like, they weren't, like, adorable. They're so in love with each other. It was like, oh, they've been together for freaking ever. And
in a, like, I'm going to give you a hard time, but we both know we're joking. Like, about having an affair and whatever. Like, you could tell that they were joking. You could tell that they loved each other and were joking.
Yeah. Wasn't there a scene? She was on the phone with somebody and, like, said that he was out with his mistress.
Yes.
She was like, Frank wants to know who you're sleeping with or something like that. I loved them. They were so
I love them. In the next scene, Buster, the local sheriff, sees an emotional outburst in the town and researches her history. Later, he pays a visit.
He sees an emotional outburst
I almost said Kathy Bates. Who plays Annie. Well, I hadn't mentioned her.
Yeah.
Of Annie. And researches her history and finds out basically everything that Paul had found out.
Which, like, why isn't she in jail?
Or what? Why?
Because
don't
you can just look her up by her name that she is giving to people.
Why don't
and people... find all these articles? Why isn't she in jail?
But also, I feel like this particular character, there'd be even in 1990 or whenever this story takes place, there'd be lots of people would know about her.
Right.
Like,
especially, this is like a small town.
Like, it's weird to me that the sheriff looked her up and knew her name. Why didn't he? I feel like he would have already known, oh, this is what she's done in the past.
Right.
Let's keep an eye on her.
Well, and like, it's a small mountain town because, like, they all knew about this famous author staying in their hotel every year to write his books. Yeah. Like, it's a small town with a lot of gossip.
Yeah.
And she's using the same name the whole way through.
It's also weird that she has not changed her name.
No, I mean, why is she not in jail?
Yeah.
There were newspaper articles saying she was arrested for killing babies. And she's just like living in her own home under the same name? Like, what?
Yeah.
The book has to describe that. Because Stephen King wouldn't leave a giant hole like that.
He pays a visit to her house to look around. When he leaves, he hears a noise and goes back inside to find Paul in the basement and is shot by Annie, which was so sad.
Oh, it was so sad.
When she says she wants to kill him then herself, he requests kill Paul then herself. He requests finishing the book first. Later, he is writing the book and requests three things: a cigarette, matches, and Dom Perignon champagne. When Annie returns, he also requests two glasses. While she's out of the room, he pours flammable liquid onto the manuscript and burns it.
Flammable liquid, also known as gasoline.
Gasoline. I'm just reading this word for
it. I know, but it's like written really badly.
He pours gas onto the manuscript and burns it, which escalates into a brawl, resulting in Annie's death.
Oh, that was intense, too. Yeah. I was going to say, after that, is it done with the synopsis?
Yeah. Well, no, then 18 months later.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
18 months later, Paul is seen in a restaurant with his agent, refusing to write a book about his experiences. He mistakes a waitress for Annie in a haunting vision as she repeats Annie's line, "I'm your number one fan."
Dude, who says that to celebrities? I know there have to be people out there who do that.
I can understand Annie saying it because she's not fully there. But if someone who has all their capacities, I can't imagine. I don't think I'm anybody's number one fan.
I don't think so either. But
maybe Gene Kelly. I really love Gene Kelly.
It's a strange thing to say to a celebrity.
Yeah. You can say, I'm a big fan.
Right, yeah.
If someone came and said, "I'm your number one fan," I would think stalkerish vibes.
Yes. And I feel like the stalkerish vibes, that's not a recent thing.
I feel like that would have been,
That's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, I'd be like, "Oh, you're my number one. Are you following me?"
What's right. What makes you believe that you are my number one fan?
Yeah.
That's scary. Mm-hmm. I will say this movie, I really like Stephen King's stories. But I don't like horror.
Uh-huh.
This one I like. Because it's a thriller.
Yeah.
I can do scary real life stuff. I can't do scary supernatural stuff.
It's wild to me.
I don't know how. Because I can't explain supernatural stuff.
Well, that's easy to not believe for me. I'm that's not a real thing. That doesn't happen.
For me, it's
a slasher film. Oh, that could happen.
But so, could it happen to you?
Who it happens to says. It couldn't happen to me, and then it does.
Okay, but this movie, he's a famous author.
This wouldn't happen to me.
Why stalker things don't really scare me, because who's stalking me?
I don't think this is an actual scary, quote-unquote scary movie.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a thriller.
I have read a Stephen King book, though. I read one, it wasn't meant to be a thriller. I guess it was kind of a thriller. There were ghosts and stuff, but it was more of a coming of age story.
I mean, the thing is, he's thought of a thriller type author.
Yeah, not so much.
But he has books that aren't thriller-ish.
No.
He has coming of age stories. He has the one about JFK's assassination.
Oh, yeah.
I could not put down. It's not a thriller, but it's a very good book. So thriller type movie or books aren't the only books that he wrote. Just that's what people think about when they think about him.
Gosh, I read that book so long.
All right, I'm going to give some behind the scenes.
Go for it.
Stephen King was quite impressed with Kathy Bates' performance in the film, so much so that he later wrote two more roles for her. The title role in his novel, Dolores Claiborne, was written with Bates in mind, and Bates later starred in the film adaptation of that book. And King also wrote the script for the TV miniseries, The Stand. His original novel featured a male character named Ray Flowers. Upon hearing that Bates wanted to be involved in the miniseries, King rewrote the part as a woman, just so Bates could play the part. James Caan once showed up to the set hungover, and all of the scenes he shot that day were unusable.
Oh, God.
Rob Reiner told Caan he had to do the scenes again because there was a quote-unquote problem at the lab. When Caan learned it had nothing to do with labs, he offered to cover the money he lost the studio.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, well, that's nice. And then that's also kind of nice of Rob Reiner to, not say, hey.
Yeah.
he kind of gave him an out.
That's good. Just, because you wouldn't, I don't know. I feel like there are some careers where, people do cover for each other. You don't really assume that Hollywood would ever be that way.
Mm-hmm. Directors, at least.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that sometimes actors cover for other actors.
Yeah.
Gene Kelly. Gene Kelly covered for Judy Garland when they were in Summerstock together.
Yeah.
Because they were really good.
Yeah, that's true. You wouldn't see it from different tiers.
But you would, and really, even though they were popular at different times, and at that time Judy Garland was kind of falling off, they were still kind of even tier as far as who they were. But you don't necessarily see a director. You don't think of directors.
Yeah, you don't hear. Yeah. Being that it kind would be of like actors. A boss covering for their employee. Yeah. The book that I read by Stephen King was called Joyland, and it was very good.
Jack Nicholson was offered the role of Paul Sheldon, but passed because he was not sure he wanted to do another movie based on one of Stephen King's novels.
But he would have been the good guy.
Yeah, after what he'd experienced with Stanley Kubrick on The Shining. I think it was Stanley Kubrick.
I feel like that would have been a traumatic
experience. You know, Rob Reiner is the opposite
of
Stanley Kubrick. So he probably would have loved
Stanley Kubrick would not be covering for anybody.
and Rob Reiner is thought of as just being a nice human. Stephen King was initially reluctant to sell the film rights to Misery because he was skeptical that a Hollywood studio would make a movie faithful to his vision. Probably especially after, after The Shining. Yeah. However, King was impressed with one adaptation of his works, Stand By Me, and agreed to sell Misery under the conditions that Rob Reiner would either produce or direct the film. So he liked Stand By Me, which is based on one of his short
stories. I thought Stand By Me was like nothing like the story. The story is called The Body.
Yeah. I've never read the story, and I've never seen the movie.
You haven't seen the movie?
But it's apparently he really liked it.
Well, I'm glad he liked it. I have heard over the years that those two are not similar. Yeah. Stand By Me is a good movie, though. And I'm sure that the story is good. I just have heard that they're not similar.
Rob Reiner studied, and you could kind of tell this, Rob Reiner studied Hitchcock movies to figure out how to shoot a thriller. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of Hitchcockian type ways he
shot. Yeah, there really was.
Reiner had Hitchcock on the brain so much that James Caan overheard Reiner chastising himself one day on set, asking himself, "Who do you think you are, Alfred Hitchcock?"
That's hard, though, because it's so out of his element. Yeah.
Kathy Bates was stage trained and preferred extensive rehearsals, while James Caan was more instinctive and naturalistic. Mm-hmm. So they had to balance the rehearsal time to make it less than she wanted and more than he wanted to kind of get a balance.
Yeah.
Even though they kind of had trouble with that aspect, James Caan, I didn't write this down, but I saw James Caan and Kathy Bates actually became really good friends.
Oh, okay.
So even though, like, at that, you're like, oh my gosh, they must have not gotten along. But they ended up becoming really good friends.
Well, that's good.
Mary Tyler Moore wanted the role of Annie Wilkes.
Whoa.
Which I can't see, but I kind of want to.
That would have been really strange.
The filmmaker, and Rob Reiner wanted somebody who wasn't that well known.
Hold on, give me a second. Rob Reiner's the son.
Yes.
Okay.
He directed.
What's
Princess
his dad's
Bride.
Name? I can't remember.
Carl,
thank you.
Carl. And yeah, that would have been weird because of the Mary Tyler Moore.
That's what I was thinking of the connection. But I couldn't remember if Rob Reiner was the son.
No, Carl Reiner's the dad.
Okay. I'm
Rob Reiner is the one that directed Princess Bride.
Yeah.
And that one movie, the mockumentary that you like.
Spinal Tap?
Spinal Tap. He directed This is Spinal Tap.
He was also in This is Spinal Tap.
Oh, I saw him once. And
he was like the director of the documentary in the mockumentary.
Well, he directed the movie.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that's a great movie. It shouldn't just be the movie that you really like. It's a fantastic movie.
I didn't think it was that good. I know I'm in the complete minority
it's
of that.
So good.
And I think we're going to watch that one.
You also didn't like Flight of the Conchords either.
I thought it was okay.
Oh, I thought you
didn't. Isn't that like the TV show?
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
With the new
I enjoyed movies. That.
Okay.
I enjoyed that. The filmmakers originally considered Bette Midler for Annie, which I could 100%
I could see that, yeah. I just feel like she and Kathy Bates are similar.
But Rob Reiner felt it was better to cast an unknown so that no one knew what kind of person Annie was.
That's fair.
But I 100%
But I don't know that anyone would have seen Bette Midler and been like, yeah, she's evil. Like I don't think that was her character back then.
All right. James Caan was not Rob Reiner's first choice for the film. I'm going to give you a list of names, see if you can see them being in it.
Okay.
Robert Redford.
Yeah.
I could too. Warren Beatty.
I'm not familiar enough with Warren Beatty.
Do you know who William Hurt is?
Yeah. Phil from Modern Family says, dance until your feet hurt, sing until your lungs hurt, act until you're William Hurt.
Oh, okay.
And that's all I could, like, I've seen William Hurt and stuff, but that's all I can think of when I hear his name is I can see Phil Dunphy saying that line.
Right. And this is my best bit of trivia because it has nothing to do with anything whatsoever. It's just like a coincidence. Kathy Bates' grandfather, who is much older, died in the 20s because he had his son or whatever when he was like 60. So Kathy Bates' grandfather, Finnis L. Bates, wrote the book Escape and Suicide of John, in all caps, Wilkes Booth. Wilkes is Annie Wilkes' last name. And I saw that and thought, that's dumb. Isn't that trivia?
But
he wrote that book in 1907.
It is what it is.
What do you rate this movie?
7 cups of coffee.
I'll give it 8 cups of coffee. Who would like this movie in the Gilmore Girls universe?
I don't know. I mean, Lorelai and Rory seem to really like...
Don't they like every type of movie?
Well, yeah, they do. But I do think that they like scary, like thriller type movies. So yeah, I could see the two of them liking it. I'm trying to think of somebody who's like an author. Jess wrote a book. I bet he would like it. I just love
the book adaptation aspect.
Yeah. I just love that Stephen King always writes books with the main character being an author. It's like, that's all he knows.
I think a lot of authors
I know. I love that. I love when I read, because I've been reading a lot more in the last couple of years. And so many authors write books with the main character being an author or being in publishing or doing, like, they just, they know that world.
I'm pretty sure this particular book was like his biggest fear. Like, he wrote this book thinking about all of his stalkerish fans.
I mean, that's like, fair.
I think, like,
this was kind really popular.
I think this is him getting his fears out of something happening.
That's fair. But he doesn't write books like...
series, except for the Dark Tower series. But he doesn't write romance.
Yeah, it sounded more like this was, like, a romantic,
yeah,
like, bodice ripper kind of book.
Yeah. I think this is kind of a fear of his.
That's fair. I just think it's so funny. He puts his main characters, he gives them his occupation, and then he puts them in these like really awful situations.
Yeah.
And it just makes me laugh when I hear about it. It's like, why? Yeah. Why are you doing that to yourself? And how do you sleep? Because like, I can't sleep after watching them. It's like, you've created this whole scary world.
Yeah. He has lots of money.
And he's funny.
And he always tweets against Trump. So I like him. I like his political.
I like when he gets snarky.
And it's funny because a lot of them conservative Twitter people will talk about how he's a nobody or how he does or whatever, like insulting Stephen King. They're like, stop. Bro, come on.
Like he's done. You're good.
Even if he didn't work anymore and he doesn't write anymore, he's good.
He could sit on Twitter for the rest of his life and he'd be fine.
Yeah, but he's still writing. He just released a book I want to read. I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah, he has been releasing stuff lately, I guess. Because that JFK book came out fairly recently.
Well, that came back, like, I read that when I was, like, 10 years ago. So, like, within the last 15 years.
Well, I've been with you the whole time, so maybe. Anytime I've been married to you, I think of as recent. And we're now
it might have been, like, six or seven years ago.
We're pushing 12 years together, and I feel like I need to stop doing that.
The next movie is
Bambi.
A little movie called Bambi.
Yeah.
So that should be fun.
We can watch it with our kids.
Yeah. Hopefully we won't have 4 weeks until the next episode.
Yeah. No vacations.
No vacations. But we'll talk to you next time when we talk about Bambi.